most objections are unarticulated. They don't tell you why. People are basically nice. They don't want to say no to your face. And so they give you a bunch of excuses, or they dodge you, they ghost you. But ultimately, most of the time, they say no thanks. That's the game, guys.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Going to be talking a little bit about why your prospects say no. Probably something you heard before, some things we talked about. But again, I think we all need to hear it and figure out how we're going to get them to say yes as well. Because right now is a time when they're telling you no. We could talk a little bit about the 3-10s, Craig, today.
Yeah, I've got some other ideas. I mean, before we get into that, yes, prospects are great, but take care of the ones who've already raised their hands, who know you, like you, and trust you, and maybe love you. And so let's talk a little bit about that, John, right? We've all got 86,400. Anybody know what that is? Put it in the chat. Put it in the comments. I'll wait to explain it later. But at the end of the day, one of the primary things that everybody should be doing and thinking about right now is, how do I take care of my A-list clients, the people who value me and my team and what we do? Because those are people that you should keep for life. Barring getting acquired by some company who doesn't give you the time of the day and sends you an email and says, you were great, thanks for the years, but we're going elsewhere. Other than that, you really shouldn't lose customers. And so what do you think about that, John? Take care of the A-list.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now with renewals coming up, you better be up your A-list clients, because people are going to be out hunting them. Take care of them. Take them out. Make sure you're doing the right thing for them. Showing them what's out there. I know some people just cruising. We get that. You got to
comment
them
on that word? Show.
Yeah.
Don't just go through the motions. HSAs. Oh, yeah. We reviewed HRA buy-up. Oh, yeah. We reviewed self-funding. Because that's when the other guy or gal is going to sneak in and go, they did a lot more than review it. They were coming in to recommend it. So just keep that in mind. Really know your customer. If you know that's going to be enough, that'll be enough. But if there's even a twinkle of hesitation, you better go into a little more detail.
Employers listening in, if you do catch this, your broker says HSA with a hide it up with an HSA, fire them. Still got brokers telling me about it. I'm dealing with one in email. I don't get it. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I don't know something, but you just don't get it.
How about the ones that give them an HSA contribution so they have 100% coverage?
If you advise your client a high deductible health plan with an HSA contribution, fire yourself. Because if you didn't fire yourself, you're going to get fired eventually when somebody smart comes in and tells you what you're doing. That's product, right? 3-10s, get them to 10 on your product. It sounds great. Sounds so good, doesn't it? A high deductible health plan with an HSA sounds like it'll work. Going to make smart consumerism, so on and so forth. It's a great, huge decrement. I remember some guy in the conference one time, benefits pro on the stage, talking about how much money he saved the client. And I went, whoa, wait, what? You moved them to a high deductible health plan. That's where the decrement was. So you shifted the cost. Well, yeah, but they're up there giving a presentation on how much money they saved for the employer. So this is happening out there. It's comical. It sounds good. I think Paul called me today or was talking to Sean and said they didn't get this group because they were showing the savings, and then all of a sudden, they just went with a high deductible health plan and cost shifted everything to the employees. I'm like, well, we're going to get it anyway year one, but just by doing this.
Yeah.
We don't have to make any major changes.
So for anybody, any employers out there, if you want to really take a deeper dive, look, take your census, break it down into your various demographics, break it down into your age bands, take a look at your population, take a look at your ignored marginalized population and what percentage of your workforce that is, right? So they're probably 200 or 300% of the poverty level, the group most subject to social determinants of health, the group most likely to be impacted by that crappy high deductible plan, the group most likely to have no balance in their HSA, and just start to take apart where the money is. Who has the highest balances in your HSA account? They're probably people with salaries above $100,000. There's probably a tremendous amount of racial disparity between where those balances are. And so when you're considering your diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, and you start to unbundle and get granular on your HSA, what most organizations find is that there's a tremendous conflict between their well-intentioned, maybe blind following of their consultant, telling them that HSA with a high deductible and some contribution was going to be good for the group, it's not good for a lot of the workforce. And so if you just go backwards, take a look, get granular, and then go backwards and go, well, the heck's the purpose of medical insurance? Is it to displace 40% of my members so they can't afford to actually use the medical insurance that we have? So they have to go through the indignity of not being able to afford it to get a 401k withdrawal to pay an unexpected medical expense? Or I could go on and on, but just take a look at that and see if it really is in alignment with what you say out of your mouth, what your website says about the vision and mission, and whether your medical plan is consistent with that.
One thing I mentioned about the HSA, so you look at it from a self-funded standpoint, trying to move group self-funding, they have an HSA in place. They've already evacuated the potential savings based on max cost because you just cost shifted the deductible over. But let's talk about adverse selection for a minute, just because I'm thinking of it looking at an email. Is if you have population in a PPO plan, a high plan, and an HSA plan, right? Why have they gone up and the spread got so much closer and closer over time? Well, what's happened is the HSA plan will drive this to younger, more healthier population that don't think they're going to use it. And people, you know, maybe that can't afford the higher plan, but those people that are on the high plan are going to be who? Super utilizers, people using it, people with more money and like to use it. And so when they beat the hell out of the plan on the top, well, there's only so much they can increase the top plan. So they got to pick it up on the HSA plan, especially if the majority of the population is the HSA plan. So you're creating adverse risk and you're just ballooning the rates. That's why they've gone through the roof to where they are. The dual option thing, I guess it could make sense in certain situations, but most cases it doesn't. And if you try to do that with self-funding, it's the same thing. I really don't know what you're trying to accomplish here when you're running an HSA plan and a full coverage plan or whatever you want to call it on a self-funded health plan. It just doesn't work. You have to pool risk. The whole point of insurance is pooling it. Some people are going to use it. Some people aren't. So if you create decrements on the premiums on this plan and these plans are here, it's just not going to work over time. So if you want the hamster wheel and chase it every year, which is fine, people make a lot of money doing it, that's fine, but don't expect it to stabilize or stay the same. It's always going to be out of balance. It's a small group, and that's the reality of it.
Many groups in California where Kaiser is, let's say, 30% of the enrollment in the state, 39, 40 million people, very substantial. What we dubbed it on the retail side was the death spiral. So eventually, when you have a PPO, non-Kaiser plan, sitting next to a Kaiser capitated HMO plan, ultimately, over a certain number of years, you're going to end up in a death spiral where the claims become untenable for the PPO participants relative to the pricing of it. And because the younger, healthier demographic typically has migrated into the capitated HMO, and so it becomes a challenge. And so just in a similar fashion, what you were talking about is depending on how groups have incentivized participation or steerage into the HSA, high deductible plan, versus the PPO, they may be creating their own death spiral over time.
I hear what you're saying. That's the reality. Let's go to the 310s for a second.
All right.
Talking to a lot of advisors, some of them getting feedback on uncertainty. We talk about, I guess we get to talk about it over and over. Instilling certainty in the prospect, right? And, you know, I just read out of the book, what Belford talks about here is, you know, the preconceived notion about you. It doesn't matter what product you're selling, whether the prospect walks in the door or answers your cold call, they're always going to have a preconceived notion about you, your product, and the company you work for. And look, we haven't done each other any favors. Insurance brokers haven't done any favors to make other insurance brokers look good. So you've already got a preconceived notion that you have to get around in order to get the prospect to even listen to you. I'll give you an example. I think we talked about last week, looking at buying a house right now. The realtor market, no, you know, no pun intended on them, but I guess maybe there is. It's like, holy shit, there's 21,000 realtors in Las Vegas right now. And everybody is tripping over each other. As soon as I mention I'm looking at a house, either somebody's a realtor or they have their best friend is a realtor. So I get want to be introduced to realtors all day if I mention that I'm buying a house. And it's like, I hear them talk or they'll tell me something. And it's the same story and the same pitch, right? And they sound like the same desperate insurance broker said, I'm going to save you 20, 40%. I'm going to quote for free. I'm going to be at your door. And I just sat there like thinking about it is like, God, what if they changed their conversation with me as a buyer looking for a house instead of saying the same shit that all of them seem to say without realizing they say it, thinking it's right. They don't even know they're saying it. Same thing as the broker world. I tend to probably do it still in my daily activities at times with prospects, to say the things that other people are saying and not realizing I'm saying it. And so the point of the story is you drive in certainty and confidence in them. You got to get the prospect to listen to you. If you sound like everybody else and you same story over and over, it sounds creative. I told a younger broker this the other day. I was like, you know, it sounds good, but it sounds like everybody else. And so don't think this is something new.
Yeah.
And so getting them past the preconceived notion, he talks about, look at it like a seesaw here, right? And a 10's over here, 1's over here. And, you know, you want to get them to a 10, but you don't know where they are. Are they from a 1 to 10 on their preconceived notion about you, your product, and your company? And so the goal is to tip the scale over to 10. And not only you got to do it on you, you got to do it with your company and your product. So he talks about the 3 tenths. In order to get them to buy, they've got to be at 10s, or they're just going to be uncertain. Uncertain about you, uncertain about, does this actually work? This is, you're telling me a lot, and you're so confident and certain that it's going to work, but there's no social proof behind it working. I don't see anybody that looks like me that says it works, other than you saying it, that makes money if I do what you say. And that's what you're up against.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Craig?
Yeah, that's probably the most unarticulated objection. We were talking to a broker last week, right, John? And it was great. He had the courage to go back to somebody who said no and said, look, you know, I'm a young broker. I'm interested in getting better. And I'd really like your honest opinion about why not. And they gave it to him. And it's a wonderful, wonderful insight. And so most objections are unarticulated. They don't tell you why. People are basically nice. They don't want to say no to your face. And so they give you a bunch of excuses, or they dodge you, they ghost you. But ultimately, most of the time, they say no thanks. And so that's the game, guys.
Yeah. Are you making, you know, they're thinking you're making promises. Maybe you can't keep the promises. And yeah. Remember, like I just said, we haven't done a good job at making us look good to employers. So when you come in, they're going to have those preconceived notions. And who were we talking to the other day that was on the Hunters Club call and said, you know, this is what they had to say, da 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 da. And they had already been in self-funding and done some things. And I said, you know, maybe the problem is the broker that they have now has already made all these promises. And unfortunately, none of them come true because they're in the wrong programs. And so you sound like him. And now you're saying you could fix it. But they already have a broker that said they could fix it and try 3 times in, let's call it self-funding. And so you're out. There's no confidence, certainty in that employer in anything that you say as an advisor, because they've already put you in another world as far as confidence. You know?
Yeah, you've got to differentiate between do they have a problem with the message or do they have a problem with the messenger? There's a difference, and you need to find out if you can.
Yeah, and we could talk a little bit about, like he does in the book, is logical certainty, right? Actual facts, figures, the features, the benefits, the long-term value proposition as it relates specifically to the prospect. And I think that's where we in our head go, well, how the hell did they say no? Craig, I remember when I first met you, I think some of my retail meetings, I would say, you know, this was a savings. How could they say no? I don't understand it. Logically, it makes sense. How could they not do it? But how do humans make decisions? Well, they make them emotionally.
Baby. Yeah.
Emotionally. And so they have zero emotional certainty in what you're stating. Okay. So, and Belver talks a lot about it. It's like tying the two together. But you can't just go and think it's all about this, that, and the numbers. And that's why the question he's asking Fajr the day we spoke to. And it's like, you've got to do a better job in the intelligence gathering. Yeah. If you didn't listen to last week's podcast, we opened up some really good stuff, inside stuff, questions we use. And then, yes, it's a little vague and higher level, deeper level you get in the Hunters Club. But getting those questions may not have nothing to do with healthcare, but they have the answers to the emotional. What are the emotional connection? What's the emotional why as to why they would even do this? Everybody assumes it's just savings.
How about this for a mind blower? Would you guys be surprised to find out that the prospect doesn't care about the savings necessarily? Too many times brokers assume that is the paramount focus and most important thing for the prospect, when in fact it may not be. And oftentimes it is not, especially if you're selling to the human resource executive, that may be the last thing on their mind. So you have to focus on and discover, are they concerned about the potential noise from employees? What about the burden of new administration and changes? And what about the disruption? Is it going to be easy to roll out? We're a national company with 37 locations. Can we really do RBP in all those locations? You know, just something as simple as that. And so what's the cost of this is going to be, right? Never in the conversation does savings come up with a human resource executive in many instances. But if you don't know that, you keep going and you keep talking about things, making the assumption, and you keep saying savings and savings, and they don't, guess what? They feel like you don't understand them. You don't know them. You don't live in their shoes, so you understand what their concerns are because you didn't ask. You just assumed, and then you threw up, I can get you a deeper discount. I can get you, we can save you more. And they don't care about that. So you really got to go back to school and figure out those answers by asking better questions.
And, you know, we talked about the first meeting, intelligence gathering, questioning, getting this data and intelligence to sell them on meeting two, which you used a book. You can use Orrin Claff's book. You guys missed High Stakes Advising. Too bad. Jordan Belfort, opening talk, had him cover exactly what I wanted. He covered everything that we wanted for the first meeting, Claff for meeting two, and coming back and pitching it, right? None of that's being done on the first meeting necessarily. And so Belfort talks about here is this emotional certainty. We buy with emotion and then justify with logic. Well, yeah, it makes sense. It's a no-brainer because this, that, or the other. But what he really talks about is what you have to do when you're selling on emotional certainty is future pacing. He talks about the technique of future pacing is painting the picture of what it's going to be like experiencing the product. And so, you know, you'd mentioned the changes you tried to make in the first meeting or, you know, earlier in today's meeting. What would it look like if your employees were able to have a plan that had zero deductible like the old days? What would that look like? Would that change the climate here of employees and whatever it is, you're future pacing them and telling them, and maybe that comes in the second meeting where you're actually showing them, hey, this is what the future looks like with this program. Your employees don't have deductibles anymore. Their doctor co-payments are this. They're not financially stressed because we're getting 10% increases every year. Future pacing, selling on emotion, and then justifying it with logic.
It's just like the picture behind you, John. Right? Your conversation, the questions you ask paints a picture in the prospect's mind. And then as they think about it, and then they articulate their messaging to you, they're telling you exactly what's important to them. And if you do it really well, they end up selling themselves on why you're the answer and why you're the reason that they need to change now. And so just imagine what John just said. So I'm curious. You said that 80% of your workforce is hourly, and you estimate their average wage to be $40,000. I'm really curious as to what you think the feelings are of the employees when you have a high deductible health plan that has a $5,000 max out-of-pocket per employee, and you give them a $500 contribution. Can you imagine the possibility, since 20 to 30% of members incur 80 to 93% of the claims, that there's a lot of those people who basically have to spend the money out of their own pocket? And since you've already told me that 90% of the employees live paycheck to paycheck, how do you think they're going to do that? Well, here's some data. Here's some social proof. This percentage of people don't go to the docs. They delay care. They don't get it. They don't renew their prescription. The adherence goes through the toilet and on and on. And you go, so now, and you engage in that conversation. Then you talk about what John was talking about. Now, what if, I know it's counterintuitive, but what if you could offer the same thing, except there'd be no deductibles, there'd be no co-payments, and they could go and get this kind of care and, you know, primary care and blah, 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 blah. And so you paint them a picture and they go, well, I can see that. And you can find out what kind of people that, can you see that? Do you hear what I'm saying?
You're pitching, you're getting into a 10 on the product, call it the product, the idea or concept. A lot of times I'll pre-qualify a group for self-funding, right? We talk about self-funding, that's what we do here, right? I don't know what else you're going in to pitch with, but we've got to sell the strategy, the idea and concept before numbers. You got to get them committed to the strategy, the long-term solution, painting the picture of what it would look like, benefits in this type of arrangement, showing them, here's what other organizations, how would you like to be 6 years later paying less now than you did 6 years ago with a 100% benefit plan? What would that feel like? And you've got to be able to sell them on the concept and the idea before you ever get to the numbers, because if they're just buying on numbers, well, then are they going to buy the self-funding? Maybe. Maybe they will. Maybe they won't. You've got to pre-sell the concept, the idea. Keep it high level. keep it destination, not transportation, not all, we're going to put this in, we're going to bolt that on, we're going to bing, 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 bing. No, very high level. Some people look at my presentation and it's like, well, that's it on your product part? Yeah, no, that's it. I'm not going into detail unless they ask me questions on it.
Look, everybody, John, you've told me a million times, right? How many brokers out there have experienced the fully insured United, fully insured Buca, fully insured Aetna, where you showed them a self-funded plan that could save them hundreds of thousands of dollars, but the network's not available. You're going to have to use standalone, independent, other networks. And they didn't pull the trigger. They didn't do it. They took the easy way out. They hit the easy button, my favorite broker button.
That was easy.
Oh, yeah. And they went to the Buca ASO. They went to the Aetna Meritain. They went to UMR with United. And they didn't get the case, and brokers just shake their head and they tell us, I don't understand, because the money wasn't important. The disruption was to them. What do you say?
Yeah.
Seen that happen a million times? 2 million?
All the time. You don't dress it. I mean, you got to gather that intelligence in the beginning. Hey, we didn't get to say out of the crowd, everybody. Let us know where you're listening in from. Let us know what kind of objections you're getting right now from prospects. And let us know. It might be just a smoke screen for uncertainty, probably. And you got to look at yourself in the mirror and go, what did I do wrong? Had a group we worked on recently, maybe a little bit of joint work. And I'll blame myself. I got in late in the game. I didn't realize the population was not all in domiciled in that group where there was a direct contract. And I sold them year two instead of selling our typical year one because I didn't realize the population was over here. And so I had to look in the mirror and go, I probably blew the sale because I didn't know that. I would have, if I knew that from the beginning and I was involved in an intelligence meeting, I would have known that and I would have changed the whole sale and sold it for year two. And so sometimes we got to look in the mirror and go, what the hell am I doing wrong? Last week on the Hunters Club call, a bunch of us said, look, here's what I'm doing wrong. Or one of the other gentlemen basically had called the prospect to find out what he did wrong. And they told him outright. We'll talk about that for a second is, certainty on you, your company size or what have you. And we've talked about it a million times on the show, Craig.
Yeah, there's plenty of way to play the game of positioning yourself so that you have a position of authority that you don't claim as a naked assertion that Google can represent on behalf of you so that you don't have to say a word about it and address it in advance. And so if you've tuned into our show the last 3 years, you know about it. If you've come to our events, you know about it. If you don't, go back and listen.
Yeah. Well, we'll cover some of it. You probably got shit all over your desk or something or in the background or, you know, usually put something up in the background for additional certainty. I need to put up.
Yeah, look at that. Look at that. Where am I going?
Put up the books, the magazine covers. You don't have to say anything.
How many people have done zero gravity astronaut training? That was the coolest experience I've ever done. And the people who rock sales with me will be going on that trip with me next time.
Do I qualify for that? How do I get qualified for that?
No.
Brad McFarren says, won't change because of blind loyalty to the broker. That's too vague. You got to give me more than that. I don't know what that means. Won't change by... Did you get enough intelligence gathering in the beginning that the relationship with the broker that they're going to never change? What's that like?
Yeah, unless they're related. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a client, there's a little over 10,000 employees, and they told us, oh, the broker's irreplaceable. And I laughed out loud because I already knew they were cool people because we'd already been joking. And I laughed out loud and I said, in 30 years, I've never heard that. Explain to me why they're irreplaceable. And they said, well, because their family's name is on a wing of the hospital. Oh, okay. But you know what? Less than 3 years later, they were fired because a new sheriff came in town, new CEO, no loyalty, got rid of them. So I would dare say that blind loyalty, maybe, but odds are probably not.
Yeah, I don't know. What other objection you guys getting? If you don't have any objections on here, you're not prospect right now. Right now is the time. It's 1-1's coming. More of the 1-1 renewals are coming out in the next week or two. We'll see what those bombs look like. Hopefully they're big. Lots of opportunity, self-funded ideas and strategies.
You've already seen a bunch of big ones, right, John?
I saw some big ones that helped us get them over the hump. Because now I'm playing on an even playing field here where fully insured is not buying the rate. Now they got to adjust to the claims and the risk. And now we got some room. Now we got some breathing room. What else we want to talk about today? We talk about product, you, your company. Again, we talked last week about that, of mentioning it in the beginning of the thing, maybe why you didn't hear about our company. But I don't want to cover too much of that today. But
You got, but go back. You want to go? You want me to explain 86,400?
Go for it.
There's only, you get everybody. Everybody gets the same 86,400 seconds in a day. Now the question is, who's going to be the most effective within that same allotted time frame? And what are you going to focus on doing? The things that make you money or not? And so we touched on it at the start of the call, right? Take care of your A-list. Why don't, when you see your A-list, you ask for introductions to other like-minded people who would value the things that you and your team do? That might be logical. Make sure you're rounding out your accounts. Make sure you cross-sell them. You're there. I know it's so tempting to just run out the door, do a 5-minute Zoom call, and they go, yeah, we looked at what you sent us, and man, it looked great. We're going to go. We're going to leave everything the same. And you go, awesome. Okay, do you want to do meetings? Or are we going to do, you know, what? And you don't talk about all the cross-sell opportunities in the case because you're so interested in just checking it off and knowing you have an annuity stream of income for the next 12 months. So everybody has diamonds and gold and rubies in their own backyard, but sometimes we forget about it.
I think there was one year where I was like, look, I'm going to go in and sell term life or group LTD to every group this year. That's my goal. And every year pick a line to sell the additional line. I mean, you're in a tighter labor market, guys. Why don't you go in and say, look, what I see the market doing, a lot of employers doing right now, they're offering these additional benefits. It's very inexpensive to offer this, include that in the listing and sell that on the call now. You know, we cover 100% LTD, 100% of life insurance, X percent of dental.
There's so many low-hanging fruits, right? I mean, there's only like 5 or 6 states that have state disability income. So everybody's usually interested in short-term disability. Go find a program that doesn't do offsets and stack it on top and, you know, find a killer contract. And I dare say a lot of people would be interested in that. Go get a rate for an accident.
Yeah, I mean, how many employers out here go, look, you know, how many times have you had to lend your employees money because of this, that, or the other? They were sick. Let's get a short-term disability policy in place. I mean, it's just such a, you know, and I would break it down to like, I would sell them on what I give my employees, the life, the LTD and this. And it's like, yeah, look, it's, you know, it's $500 per employee per year cost. So for $500 budgeting it, this is what it would cost per employee. So you can, you know, add that to the salary and kind of, you know, budget it. And it's just in today's labor market, you better have all this shit because it's a buyer's market.
And let me tell you, a lot of the markets around the country are PPOs, right? I'm in California where I live and it's still dominated by HMOs, but we've got our fair share of PPOs. In the most of the country, it's PPOs. Okay, guys, you are out of your freaking mind. If you aren't, I don't care if you're an employer watching or a broker, you should be talking about second surgical opinions and just bolting it on to every group at renewal. Take it from me as somebody who's needed it for the last 15 months and used it repeatedly. Shout out to Fabian Carrillo, More Health. Second surgical opinions will save your ass because literally in medicine out there in America today, we're on our own. You are hard pressed and lucky to find a physician who's really paying attention, who really cares. It's sad, but it's true. Many of them, they're overworked, they're understaffed, they have a lot of conflicts of interest. And so there's a lot of misdiagnosis out there. There's a lot of people, you think they read the scan. They didn't read the scan. Did not. Told you they made a recommendation based on this. They didn't read the scan. I've lived it personally with significant claims. And so you get a second opinion, you get a third opinion, sometimes you get a fourth opinion. And that is the world we live in. And so I would tell you, you are crazy if you don't add second surgical opinion onto every group, especially if you're self-insured.
Yeah, easy bolt on to work it. Give them incentive to use it. What else we got, Craig? Enough, we'll wrap it up here.
That's it.
I'm going out for a stogie.
Ooh.
Have a nice stogie. The weather here is lovely right now in Las Vegas. So I'm going to enjoy that weather. Enjoy the balcony when the weather is good for the stogie. So nice. That being said, why your prospects says no, show sponsor Virtue Alliance. Check us out. If you haven't sent us an opportunity, let us know. We'll check them out. 50 to 150. No claims data. No IMQs. Fully insured conversion product. Let us know. If your market sucks, don't send it to us. 10,000 per employee per year or more. Happy hunting, guys. Go close some business. Make it happen. It's crunch time. Keep winning. We want to see you
win. Use those seconds wisely.
There you go, my friend. Be good. We'll see you on the next one.